your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, podcast listeners, it is Wednesday. It is Western Conference Wednesday on Locked On NHL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's show, before we get into the fun, it is all brought to you by Built Bar. You can go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. My name is Sarah Avampato. I am your host here on the show. You can also hear me on Locked On Los Angeles Kings. You can hear me on the Monday edition of this show here today with Tom Gazzola, also of later week editions of Locked On NHL, also of TSN. How's it going? How is life treating you? How is the hockey world? Because we've got some actually bad teams to talk about today now that I look at our agenda.
Bad teams are the best to talk about, though, Sarah. That's the most fun part, is talking about bad teams, because I'm going to steal a term from you. You can just dunk on them. I love that term, by the way. Thank you for asking how things are going over here. It snowed in Edmonton overnight. It's kind of cold as we record this. I've got my fireplace on. Yeah, it feels like we basically bypassed the fall and went kind of into the early parts of winter. I hope that we get a little bit of warmth coming back. And it feels like, honestly, that the lights have sort of been turned off, or let's just say dimmed down pretty low in the hockey world. But we've still got some nuggets to chew on for sure when it comes to the world of the National Hockey League, because, you know, even though there isn't really a ton of news, there's still enough news that it gets the pot stirred and we can chew on it for a little bit. So here we are, and we're going to just rifle through it, I think.
Yep. Especially, you know, us being hockey people, even the smallest nuggets of news, we're like, let's dissect this. And the very first one we're going to dissect is the latest news out of the Chicago Blackhawks. We talked about them on last week's show, if you happen to tune into that, because my big question was, what the heck are they doing? That direction has become a little more clear. And by clear, I mean not really. But they put out a message to their fans, essentially, earlier on Tuesday, where they pretty much finally admitted what we all know, is that they are rebuilding. And it was more apparent than ever when they let Corey Crawford go to New Jersey, when they made a totally random trade to send Brandon Saad to the Colorado Avalanche. And so for anyone who hasn't read this letter or heard about it or whatever, I just want to read some choice highlights from this message from the Blackhawks that is trying to reassure their fans that everything is going to be okay. Spoiler alert, I don't buy that. So in their message to Blackhawks fans, they say, "We recently said goodbye to a pair of popular two-time champions and acquired some new players via trade and free agency. We understand it was tough to see those respected veterans go and realize you may have some questions about our direction. We'd like to address that direction and share why we're hopeful for the future of Blackhawks hockey. We're committed to developing young players and rebuilding our roster. We want more than another chance to win. We want to reach the summit again and stay there, an effort that will require a stockpile of emerging talent to complement our top players. The influx of youth and their progression will provide roster flexibility and depth throughout our lineup. We were already the youngest team in the 2020 playoffs, and several Blackhawks experienced that intensity for the first time. This will help to further establish a culture that embraces the grind of improvement, driven by competitors who are relentless, engaged, and motivated by a team-first mentality to win." Blah, 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 blah. All I could think of was, when I read this, and I got this in my email as a person who has a like mini ticket plan with the Chicago Blackhawks and give them money to watch a very subpar on-ice product in the past few years, all I could think of was, like, the gold standard for me right now at this point is the letter that the New York Rangers sent out a couple of years ago that basically was like, we're bad, we're gonna be bad, and it's gonna be better in the future. And, you know, I'm not a Rangers fan, but reading that letter from them, I actually kind of felt reassured by the letter that the Rangers released. This from the Blackhawks just feels like they got a room of like six marketing executives together and put together a bunch of buzzwords to make me feel like this team has a direction. And I still don't believe that they do.
It's funny because the letter to the fans, the transparency, let's call it, the honesty and forthrightness, it's noble and the idea is good, but it's a double-edged sword, Sarah. And you mentioned the Rangers. They're coming out okay on this. And I'll just go into my backyard here in Edmonton. And I was working as the host of Oilers TV at the time the Oilers were going through their rebuild when they got Taylor Hall, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Neil Yakupov, and so on and so on and so on. And they didn't come out and put a letter out. They just outright said it in numerous press conferences that the team was rebuilding. Bear with us, bear with us. And where it's a little bit different than what the Hawks approach was, is they had, you know, Kevin Lowe at the time, Steve Tambellini, who was GM, then Craig McTavish, who was GM. They had these guys out there saying it to the fans and not just doing it in a letter. And then, you know, what would happen at the end of those seasons when they played so bad that they finished, you know, 28th, 29th, 30th? Daryl Cates, the owner, would put out a letter to the public. So it was noble at the time. And then the more that it dragged on and there was little to no improvement from the team, the fan base went from understanding to frustration to apathy and then scorn, hate, and just so fed up with the team. Then they got McDavid and it was like they got a restart on the rebuild, which is unheard of. And the hockey world mocked the Oilers, rightly so. And that's such a rare opportunity because, you know, if this was an American team in a market that they have to compete with NBA, NFL, MLB teams and share a piece of that pie from the sports fan base, they would be buried and gone for years. And might have to move. That's how poorly things went here in Edmonton. So the Hawks doing that is interesting. And we all kind of knew about it too, right? Like it was like, how do you hide them? Like you look at that roster last year, you go, okay, that you're rebuilding. And you know, they never really came out and said it outright till we saw the letter on Tuesday. And the other thing too, the language that's used in those letters, you also alluded to with the marketing people and having to deal with them working for an NHL team for 8 seasons and the buzzwords. I remember being forced to attend marketing meetings and it was exactly those type of people. And my eyes just glazed over as soon as they started throwing out those stupid buzzwords and call to actions, this crap, this stupid word, this term. Like it was just for me as someone who is telling the story of the team and as a part of the media, I was just like, okay, this is garbage. So we'll see how this approach goes over to what is a pretty loyal and pretty, from what I've experienced traveling with the Oilers, going to Chicago and experiencing in the United Center, which is my favorite stop on the tour by far. We'll see how well Hawks fans respond to this letter that came out from the organization Tuesday, because it can go both ways. And you've got a gleaming, fantastic example how to do it right in New York with the Rangers. And then you have, you know, the Oilers model that you know, took a left turn and went sideways multiple times.
We continue to look at the situation in Chicago coming up right after this. First, though, from the best-selling authors of The Daily Stoic comes the ultimate stoicism guide to success, resilience, and virtue, to accept what you cannot control and adapt to what you can. Sports teams across the country are applying this popular philosophy by using Stoicism's key idea. You control how you respond and play. You don't control what the refs and fans do or how the ball bounces. It's all about what you did to adapt. Life's the Stoics, The Art of Living from Zeno to Marcus Aurelius is available now wherever books are sold. Yeah, and I feel like, you know, from the perspective of a person who gets all of the emails from the Blackhawks being like, are you sure you don't want to buy another ticket package? Are you sure you don't want to upgrade to season tickets? And I mean, I can't tell you how many years I was on the wait list for season tickets for the Blackhawks, because, you know, the wait list at some points had probably like 10,000 plus people on it to get season tickets. And now friends of mine who came into town once to see a game and bought a set of tickets and don't even live in the area are getting emails from their ticket people being like, hey, you want to come back? Which right. I totally understand, because it's a very uncertain world. They need to lock down as many plans as they can because they still have to make money. They still have benchmarks to meet, whatever. But there's also, you know, people are not renewed. I know a lot of people who have given up their season tickets because they're like, I don't want to go to these games to watch my team get shelled every night. And now, you know, leaving the net up to three basically unproven goaltenders and a prospect pipeline that has some good in it with, you know, like guys like Kirby Dach, who is kind of coming into his own. Their draft picks this year, Lucas Reichel was really pretty highly ranked. But if you look at Corey Pronman with The Athletic, has the Blackhawks as number 17 out of 31 of talent. So yep. they're trying to sell hope, but there isn't a whole lot of hope in the pipeline just yet. So I feel like it's just a tough decision for everyone all around. And especially, I know we touched on this last week, but Jonathan Toews coming out and saying, I was not consulted on this. No one told me we're rebuilding. He's like, I'm here to win. Having that core of veterans who have been here for the long haul, who, if you believe the sort of rumors in the hockey world, maybe do not necessarily get along particularly well with their coach. The organization is standing behind him. There's just so much happening, and none of it is pointing towards a team that is going to be putting together a great on-ice product.
No, especially with that goaltending. I'll tell you what, it's not going to do them any favors.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's going to be a challenge all around. And we've got lots of teams in the Western Conference that are kind of having challenges, especially in the goaltending department, and also in the saying goodbye to some well-loved, well-respected players on their team. And one of those is the San Jose Sharks, who, as we talked about a little earlier, if anyone listening missed it, on the Monday edition of this show, I talked with Cal Demetrius from Locked On Sharks all about his Joe Thornton memories and what that looks like for the team moving on. But the Sharks are now without their longtime iconic player who decided to sign a one-year deal with the Maple Leafs because, as he openly admitted, he wants to win a Stanley Cup. And he, even though as someone who I feel like we all think could play forever, you know, I think he knows the clock is ticking and he needs to chase that cup. It's really the end of an era in San Jose. And looking at what they're doing, you know, one of the worst teams in the Western Conference, their goaltending kind of imploded last season. They haven't done a whole ton this offseason. You know, they acquired Devan Dubnyk, who is probably not the solution to their goaltending woes. So we have another team here that is just sort of stuck in that no man's land of not good enough to compete, but not also making the moves or having the prospect pool to really turn it around in any sort of efficient fashion.
The Sharks are interesting because for how long, Sarah, they were, you know, considered at least a contender or one of the top teams in the Western Conference, like two decades, they've had this mm-hmm. fantastic run. And you're right. You know, they missed the postseason this past year. They have lost some pillars. You know, Brent Burns is old. They bring back Patrick Marleau. Mm-hmm. It'll be nice to see him, you know, leapfrog a few legends of the game when it comes to mm-hmm. games played. And he certainly is in prime shape to surpass Mr. Hockey himself, Gordie Howe. And it'll be good to see that occur in a Sharks uniform, his third stint with the team. But you're right. A staple of that organization has been Joe Thornton since the trade from Boston in the 05-06 season. And that was a game changer for that franchise and for Joe Thornton. He was in the middle of one of his best seasons ever. As I recall, they faced the Oilers in the second round of the playoffs, and the Oilers upset them and went on to the Cup final. But it started this fantastic run for the Sharks, and not seeing Jumbo Joe in the lineup in teal and black trim is going to be weird. And it will be odd to see him wearing number 97 in blue and white in Toronto. And now all of a sudden, the weird thing too about that is he says he wants to win a Stanley Cup. He wants to give himself a chance to win the Stanley Cup. I don't know what the Leafs have done really to put them over the top mm-hmm. to make them any better and in any better position that they were in last season. Attitude adjustment certainly was needed. And they brought in guys with a lot of character and Wayne Simmonds. and now Joe Thornton, and they've maintained Jason Spezza, which is great. But at the same time, I don't know if on the ice, regardless of character, if they're going to be any better than the team we witnessed the last couple of years. Would I like to see Joe Thornton win a Stanley Cup? Sure, that'd be nice. You know, he's a surefire Hall of Famer, but is it going to happen with the Maple Leafs? I think his chances aren't very good. We'll see. I got more excited seeing him suit up for HC Davos. I'm not going to lie to you, Sarah. Mm-hmm. That to me was pretty funny. Yeah. And the fact he's not taking a paycheck. His wife is a Swiss lady. And that to me was interesting and intriguing and caught my attention more so than him joining the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I feel like the picture I've been getting from talking with a lot of Sharks people is that everyone had just sort of assumed that one day he would decide, you know, either he would win a Stanley Cup with the Sharks somehow, or he would just decide, you know what, I'm done in the NHL. Like, you know, maybe no one's going to re-sign me, or I just don't feel like I can keep up anymore. And everyone just sort of assumed that he would go back to Switzerland. He would go to Switzerland, take his family, play in for Davos or for another Swiss team, and spend the last couple of his years of his career playing in Switzerland, just kind of for the low-key experience of it. I don't know that anyone actually expected him to sign with another NHL team, especially with Toronto. And like you said, if he wanted to chase a cup, there's a lot of teams that I have a lot more confidence that are going to get at least to the final, let alone actually have a chance of winning. Like he could have, you know, gone to Colorado. He could have gone to Vegas, as weird as that would have been, and probably had a better shot at getting to the Stanley Cup final than I think he is in Toronto. And so, you know, he said it's not about going home. It's not about going closer to his family or anything. It's not about money, obviously, because he took league minimum.
Yep.
And it's just about winning the cup. And I was like, I don't know that if Joe Thornton could have like willed a team to win just out of his like sheer force of nature, he would have willed the Sharks to do it like six times by now. Like, I don't know if he can force the Leafs to win him a Stanley Cup, as cool as that would be. It'd be like the one time I'd actually be rooting for Toronto for something just to see him finally get to lift the cup.
Right. He is still a good depth player too. We have to give him credit for that. Is he a goal scorer? Absolutely not. He's got a great depth touch with the puck. His passing ability is superb. He doesn't have wheels like he used to, not to say that he ever really was that fast by any means, but he's a good depth signing. And you're right. Like the money wasn't a thing. It was a very team friendly league minimum salary that he signed to. And in terms of stacking up who might be a contender come playoff time next year, I'm a little bit surprised, unless it's just a hot talk by him, that he believes the Maple Leafs are going to be one of those teams in the mix. Cause you're right. There's some other options out there where if you're offering your services for such a team friendly price, I don't see why some other teams that have a more stacked roster wouldn't take a flyer on Joe Thornton to be their third line center type of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, especially teams that have a lot of kind of young players that are, you know, those teams that just need one more thing or one more player, or need to just learn to be a little bit harder to play against, or need someone who's been there before kind of thing. You know, I just think of for the Leafs or for whatever team it is, whatever young players are there, whatever rookies or people early in their career, even players who have been around for a long time. Like if I were a professional hockey player, I would love the chance to get to learn from a guy like Joe Thornton, who has done it all, seen everything, and is going to be a Hall of Famer whenever he is done. And just the chance to be able to soak it up from him. And regardless of what team he's on, it's a great learning experience for all these other young guys. But yeah, I just don't see it happening with Toronto.
Sarah, that's a good point you bring up about learning from a guy like Joe Thornton. And he's been through it all, like you mentioned. One guy that he really took under his wing, and it surprised me how he was able to calm and settle this guy down after being a wild child for a couple of different organizations, was Evander Kane. When Joe Thornton picked up Evander Kane from the airport after the trade from Buffalo, it kind of set the tone for Kane. And especially in Winnipeg, there was all these stories of him running around and clashing with teammates and infighting. And then apparently things, you know, weren't necessarily better in Buffalo. And there are all kinds of situations in that locker room at a time when that team was in the midst of going through turmoil, and Evander Kane didn't do anything to make things better. And then when he got to San Jose, it was Joe Thornton that really set the tone. And all it started with him just picking him up from the airport. And we saw Evander Kane tweet about Joe Thornton when the signing occurred. And I think that's just a good example of what you summed up about the character and leadership of a guy such as Joe Thornton has and what he's been through and can bring to a team and some young players.
We take a look at another struggling team in the Arizona Coyotes. Plus, we say goodbye to a legend as Doc Emrick hangs up the microphone for one last time. That is coming up on the show. First, though, Built Bar is back. It is better than ever, and it has lots of great new flavors for you to try. If you don't know what Built Bar is, it is the best tasting protein bar ever. It's low in calories, high in fiber, high in protein, and is great for you whether you are trying to lose weight, maintain weight, or just have a nice healthy snack that tastes delicious. Built Bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, they're nice and fluffy and marshmallowy. They come in a ton of amazing flavors, including caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, coconut almond, mint brownie, salted caramel, and a whole bunch of others. There's nut and nut-free varieties, so if that is a thing that you are on the lookout for, guess what? Built Bar has you covered. You can go right now, check out all of the great flavors they have on BuiltBar.com. Sometimes they also even have special limited edition flavors. For example, they recently had a strawberry flavor. They had a pumpkin flavor earlier on in the fall. So definitely make sure you are keeping up to date on all your Built Bar news to never miss out on a cool, fun, limited edition flavor. You can go to BuiltBar.com. Right now, check it out and use promo code Locked On to get 20% off your next order. Use promo code Locked On for 20% off at BuiltBar.com.
We have one other team that is continuing our theme of teams where we're just like, what are you doing? And this one, it brings me no pleasure to have to say this because it's a team that I always am just kind of rooting for them to get their act together and to finally prove everyone wrong who doubts them and who says that, you know, the team should be moved to Quebec or something. I want this team to succeed, but every time something happens, I'm just like, oh man. And that is the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah.
Now having a new GM in the very experienced Bill Armstrong, who came from the St. Louis Blues and really was instrumental in helping build the Blues up into the team that won the Stanley Cup, spent 16 years there, spent a lot of time scouting. So he is someone who knows that end of the business inside and out. The Coyotes, you know, tried going the different route of being very analytics based and have now gone back to the more traditional route of looking at who's running your team. But they did, you know, make the playoffs, qualify for the playoffs-ish for the first time since 2012. Did not end well for them. They ran out of gas and faced a very, very good Colorado team and just sort of imploded. The Coyotes have basically said, we're looking to become a cup contender. And that's great. That's what I want to hear my GM and my ownership and my leadership of my team say. I want to hear them say, you know, we want to compete. We want to be better. We want to, you know, earn your fandom. But then when you look at what the Coyotes did, they signed a bunch of guys who are basically grit players. They didn't get really anyone who's going to move the needle in terms of fixing their problems. They just got a bunch of guys who are going to be hard to play against, which is valuable, but that's not how you win. So the Coyotes are saying the right things again for the millionth year in a row, it seems like, but they're another team, much like Chicago, that has a very poor prospect pool. The Coyotes did themselves no favors by getting into trouble for basically improperly scouting or improperly, you know, dealing with prospects and all that. And so had to forfeit a bunch of picks because they did testing and stuff that they're not allowed to do. So they didn't really have any useful draft picks this year. So it's just another organization that I'm just like, what direction are you going in? You have a goal, but I don't really, it's like your map is broken and you're, it's one of the, like, whenever all the, you know, Google Maps would update or Apple Maps would update. And then suddenly there's 14 news stories about woman drives into lake because Apple Maps told her to turn left. And so she did. Huh. And she turned left into a lake. Like, I feel like that's kind of where the coyotes are. Of like, they know where they want to get, but I don't trust that. Like, they're actually going to get there.
It's too bad because there's a lot to like about playing in the desert. And this city, Phoenix, is my second home. You know, we have a family home down there, and my parents are avid Coyotes games. They go to a ton of them. So, like, if they were to move, which, you know, clearly Gary Bettman is against relocation. We saw it with Winnipeg and Atlanta and all of that. But you're right. Like, it's, hey, is this team moving? Because there's the possibility of Houston, which is something that we've heard. Quebec has always been thrown out there as a possibility because they just built a new arena a few years ago. And then there's all these question marks with ownership in Arizona. And this goes back for over a decade. So these themes keep recurring and popping up over and over again. And all of a sudden, this team, which seemed for at least a little while to have a little bit of traction under Rick Tocchet and even John Chayka, and bring it in some decent pieces, looked like they were ready to take the next step. They were even competing, Sarah, for the top spot in the Pacific Division for times this past season. Now, all of a sudden, you look at the lineup and you go, geez, there's nobody left. Taylor Hall obviously left because he couldn't figure or come to deal with the Coyotes or didn't like the team's outlook. They lost some other key players. Brad Richardson moved out. Michael Grabner, who's kind of in the latter half of his career. Vinny Hinostroza moves out. And they bring in Tyler Pitlick and Johan Larson. And then I'm not like John Hayden, sure. I know he's an addition, but come on, the guy hasn't done much over the course of his career. Tyler Pitlick is, you know, a good third, fourth line guy. Johan Larson, same type of thing. These guys aren't going to move the needle. And now all of a sudden, especially up front, you're looking at Clayton Keller to carry a big chunk of the load. And he's still a developing young player. Sarah, you've got Phil Kessel, who I think relishes in actually being a secondary piece to a team's offense and a very good one. But we witnessed him in Toronto when the spotlight was on him. He was not always the happiest. That's not an easy market to play in. It's very tough. But I think Phil Kessel's at the point in his career where he's just happy to be one of the guys that's not one of the drivers of the bus, but more so one of the contributing passengers. So now they're going to look at him and count on him more. Derek Stepan, you know, he's a good NHL player, but is he a guy that's going to put you over the top offensively? No. Nick Schmaltz, same thing. So there's so many holes in this lineup, and Bill Armstrong has a ton of work to do. And I know he keeps, you know, making the comparisons to Cacti and all of this about the players he's picking up and they're prickly to play against, yada, yada, and all these wonderful cliches. Like, that's nice. A good way to endear yourself. But you got to put a team on the ice that's competitive. And quite honestly, this Coyotes team is taking two steps back. I don't think you're going to be taking a step forward for a while here because there's no big dogs to lead this pack whatsoever. And you've got a three-headed goalie monster too because you get Aiden Hill signed again. He's kind of a budding young goaltender. And, you know, there was talk about Darcy Kuemper being traded. And then what happens with Antti Raanta? So you're right. This organization is being pulled in so many different directions. It just needs to figure out which route to get to its destination it wants to take. Reboot that Google map and don't be the lady that drives the bus into the lake.
I want them to have success as someone who in general likes to root for teams that are from non-traditional markets, teams that people kind of look down on or say, like, why is there a team there? Like, I want to see them do something to accomplish something, even if it's, you know, at the expense of my own team that I cover. I think it would be cool to have a really strong, you know, Southern desert, you know, Sun Belt, whatever base of teams. You know, we just saw a all Southern Stanley Cup final with Dallas and Tampa. And, you know, I would love for all of these teams to really be resurgent and, you know, be competitive. But yeah, there's no direction, and I feel bad for the people who are lifelong fans, or, you know, who are really devoted to this team, who just hope their fortunes change. But yeah, there's no direction. There's a lot of work that they have to do. So we will wrap up with the one other big hockey news thing that came out recently. And it's not about any team or any player. It is about Doc Emrick, who has announced that he is retiring. Just a handful of stats from his career. He has covered professional hockey for 47 years. He has called more than 3,750 games, 22 Stanley Cup Final Series, 19 NHL Winter Classic and Stadium Series games, 14 NHL All-Star games, and did 6 Olympic Winter Games. So whatever it is in hockey that you could do in terms of calling games, in terms of being an iconic television presenter, a voice of hockey, he has done it. And for, you know, American fans who have essentially grown up listening to him, it's going to be very strange to hear different voices on the television next year. And, you know, I think the one sentiment that I keep hearing repeated is it's obviously a very well-deserved retirement for him. He has done everything he could possibly have done, achieved everything. He basically wins the Emmy every year for sports broadcasting or whatever. You just kind of wish there could have been a better send-off for him, and that his final year, his final Stanley Cup, wasn't the bubble, and that there had been a little bit more around it, more opportunities for people to celebrate him. But then, you know, I think maybe this is how he wanted it, and maybe he wanted to be able to just sort of hang it up and not have the spotlight on him, and just, you know, quietly say, okay, I'm done. But really would have been nice to know that you were listening to the last call that he was going to ever give in that last game of the Stanley Cup final.
An absolute legend, Sarah. I have nothing but tremendous respect for Doc Emrick. To me, he was the best voice of NHL, the hockey game, video game series that EA Sports puts out. And quite honestly, a lot of times I would find myself switching over to the NBC feed to listen to Doc. And even though I've been covering the NHL for 13 years, the Oilers never really had a lot of games that Doc called. And unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to meet Doc Emrick. But I know a lot of people that are very good friends with him and know him well, and they all love him and they have nothing but good things to say. High praise for him. He is a gracious, humble guy from what they tell me. And that's hard to do when you're at the top of the pyramid the way Doc Emrick was for so long. And here in Canada, we had Bob Cole, and he just, you know, had his swan song a year ago or a year and a half ago. And following suit is Doc Emrick. So the good thing is, with Doc, you know, saying goodnight and goodbye, that NBC does have some really good up-and-coming talent and some established guys that are tremendous. And I think of John Forslund, I think of Kenny Albert, and I think Steve Levy calls games. And then there's young guys like Brendan Burke, who's a big time up and comer, Alex Faust down in LA calling Kings games. So, you know, the legend of Doc will live on. And those that I just mentioned know that there's huge shoes to fill. But in time, I think they're going to, you know, maintain, or at least strive to maintain, the precedent and the bar and the level that Doc Emrick has achieved, because Doc Emrick has taken broadcasting and hockey to a different level, and everyone strives to be as good as him. And there's some good ones down the pipeline ready to go, but Doc will always be Doc. That's for sure.
We have heard numerous stories from broadcasters, even from our own colleagues here at Locked On, who have been inspired by him. So his legacy is very sound. He has a lot of people who he has inspired to pursue hockey, to pursue broadcasting, and hopefully that they strive to emulate him, because he is as good a person as it gets from everything I've heard from people who know him. So a sad day to know that he is calling it quits, but he is had just an amazing career and has inspired a ton of people. So we'll have to see who gets to step up to fill his shoes, even though it's impossible to ever replace him. That's it for today. We have talked about some bad teams and some worse teams, and we will just have to cross our fingers that maybe one of them does something good in the near future or the far future. Who knows? For people who want to hear more from you, follow your work, keep up on the Oilers, all that stuff, where can they find you?
TSN 1260 and TSN. I'm there Monday to Friday, so you can catch me there and follow along on Twitter at Tom Gazzola for sure.
All right, and I am on Twitter at Right Said Sarah. This show's on Twitter at Locked On NHL Pods. Make sure you're subscribing to the show if you haven't already. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a rating or a review if you are enjoying this show. Tell your friends all about it, because we are here every day with our rotating casts of awesome hosts to bring you hockey news from across the league. Make sure your friends know about it so that they tune in as well. And that is it for this week from us. We'll be back next week with more Western Conference news. Make sure you listen tomorrow, because there are other great hosts to take you through the rest of the week as well. Until next time, this has been Locked On NHL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.